cliffcentral.com.
Alrighty, let's get into this. I love that song. Alright, everybody ready? Monday morning, just after 7 o'clock. Ben, biggest story of the weekend, besides Kwezi, and who was out on Idols? What's the biggest story of the weekend?
Well, Gareth, back in 2003, the Springboks lost to the All Blacks 16-52. And we all thought, oh, what a joke. 16-52. Well, they just lost 15-57.
That's
the worst... Uh-huh. That is the third time the All Blacks have scored 50 against us. You know how many times we scored 50 against them?
No.
Zero.
Oh.
So we got AJ Fenter to try and make some sense of this, because I'm just going to start babbling.
Yeah, all right. Let's speak to AJ Fenter. I know this guy can... He's one of the few people... You know, I have a problem often speaking to sports people, because I feel a lot of them say things that they think we want to hear, and they're also trained to be, you know, diplomatic, for want of a better word. And that's not what we need right now. We need someone who can tell the truth. And I reckon AJ Fent is the guy who could talk to us about this. Flax, why can't I get a telco line on my desk here? Hey, let me just see where the telephone is. For some reason, I don't have telephone on here.
Oh, dear.
And then I can't put AJ on if I don't have a telephone. I don't know what the hell's going on here. Let me just reset the whole damn thing. See whether I can get it that way.
Well, obviously, see, talk about the Springboks, things crash. Not just them, everything crashes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just to give you an understanding of how one-sided that game was, the Springboks had 32% possession and 29% territory against the best team in the world. They carried the ball 61 times. The All Blacks carried it 151 times. The All Blacks beat 33 defenders. Mm-hmm. The Box beat two.
Jeez. Okay.
Yeah, I think I got AJ on. Hey, AJ, good morning. Hello? Oh, for God's sake. Not there? Is it me? Is it the desk? What the hell's going on here? This thing's going to drive me to drink, I swear. It's lunacy. Let me try again. I don't know what to do with this. Ben, do you think people are starting to lose faith in the one thing that they've always had faith in is South African rugby and South African sport?
It's so true, Gareth. It's a real question. This is why I want to chat to AJ. You know, in the past, it was always like the historical strength of the Springboks, and it was the one thing everyone went to, because people were laughing about Bafana being so cuck, the Proteus choke, and everyone's like, haha, but the Springboks still win World Cups. But now, they don't know they're awesome at Elba. And it's quite a big thing for the psyche of your average South African drunk, because, you know, you want to be able to feel, you know, you want to outsource your manlihood, and you want to feel strong about something, because ultimately your children disappoint you in life. Your job's not what you hope it to be. And you never make as much money, and your wife's never as pretty.
I don't have the telephone line here. For some reason, the thing is just, it's not giving me any happiness. What's going on over there, Flax?
I have no clue. I've summoned a tech with the Aero 401. They're on their way right now.
I just want to... Is it too much to ask that I can speak to AJ Fenter when we want to? Whether that I can have a phone line that works? How could the desk not be work? It was fine on Friday. What the hell happened between Friday and now?
AJ?
Michael, please apologize sincerely to him.
I think that's what he's doing too. Oh, dear.
Don't give up. I'm going home. Bye-bye.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm out of here.
You know, there's going to be a bit of traffic on the way back home at around this time.
I'm out of here. I can't do this.
Peak hour.
What the hell, man?
In one
Seriously. Ugh, I'm going to go to a song. I don't know what to do with this thing.
Because all of my head is moving on. Because you know I'm all about that bass.
About all I can handle of Megan Trainor anyway. All about that bass. I mean, do me a favor. All right, everybody ready? Let's pretend that didn't happen, shall we?
Oh.
It's live radio, but let's just all, let's just pretend I did not have sexual relations with that link. Not at all.
Okay, so...
Back to the beginning. What's in the news?
Gareth, I suppose we have to talk about the Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu.
This man, he just had a birthday, and the reason I'm reticent to talk about him is that they published a picture of him, and I actually tweeted out the article, and I know people don't last forever, but the arch is looking frail. He even said in the article, you know, he's closer to the departures lounge than the arrivals one. And you could see here's a man who's, he by the way also has come out in favor of assisted suicide.
Yes, which is being led by Dignity SA.
Right, just basically
this campaign or this movement.
That an old person who is who's no longer really in control is able to determine their own exit strategy, if you know what I mean. And in his case, he really wants to have that right. He says it should be his right to decide. When he's had enough, he shouldn't be kept alive on machines. And we all remember what happened with Madiba. They kept him going for an eternity. And the guy was pretty much in a vegetative state towards the end. This has all emerged in the months after his death. And I'm sure Desmond Tutu doesn't want to be treated the same way. He doesn't want to be kept alive for everybody else's reasons and not his own. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a difficult conversation to have because, you know, on the one side, you'll have those people who believe that, you know, it shouldn't be up to you to decide when you go. It should be up to a higher power or a higher source. But then on the other end, you know, you've got a person who has aged and maybe they're in genuine serious pain. Maybe they're in great discomfort. And, you know, so it just brings about all sorts of difficult conversations for a family dealing with a situation like that to have. And so the campaign's aim will be to bring the issue of death and dying to the world stage. This is according to the Right to Die campaigner, Sean Davidson. And indeed, the Archbishop has thrown his moral weight behind the campaign. Davidson said that the Arch had agreed to work with Dignity SA, and the project will materialize soon. It will build on the worldwide publicity generated by Tutu's 85th birthday call on Friday for the right to choose when and where he dies, which, you know, maybe the staunch religious people are taking issue with the fact that a whole Anglican Archbishop supports this kind of movement, and so they're finding it difficult to, you know, to resolve those kinds of feelings within themselves.
This guy, he has done everything for that same religious community. This man has put his life on the line for the people of South Africa innumerable times. Remember how he was one of the few voices in the world that spoke out frankly and honestly against apartheid? He was one of the few voices in the world that have stood for what the Anglican Church is, what it means, how it can matter in people's lives. This crazy bunch of religious people that you're talking about, the ones who want to stop him from determining the way that he leaves the stage.
Well,
who are these people?
Essentially, what they're doing is they're being judgmental. That's what they're doing. They are taking issue with the Archer's stance, and they have decided that morally this puts them above the Archbishop for thinking this way.
Who thinks they have the right to tell you what to do with your meat?
Staunch religious people?
Yeah, well, we should ignore them. I don't know how these people even have a say.
But this is what I can't quite get. I know the Bible says you can't take your own life because then you'll go to hell or whatever. But
does it? I don't even know that it says that.
But if you spend your entire life worshipping Jesus, do you not want to go hang out with him? Like, I mean, this world's done, okay? You're finished here. As a human, that's pretty much done. It's been good. But now, your one chance, your biggest life ambition is to do all these things so you can go to heaven. Why not just go?
Yeah.
You're kind of there.
Oh, I wish a lot of... Do you know what I wish? I wish all the religious fundamentalists would take that course. Then the world would be free of them. We could all just carry on living happily in peace, and all the nutcases could take themselves out of the equation. Please, can't we change the Bible? Can't we go in there and just edit out that line and put in, if you really want to be with Jesus, go now.
And you can have a certain ceremony to make it official, and a money spinner, of course, because nothing goes through the church without, you know, a greasing of a palm.
Whatever, I don't care how. Just get yourself out of the picture.
Get it done.
So part of what the Arch said on his 85th birthday celebrations was, "I hope I am treated with compassion and allowed to pass on to the next phase of my life's journey in the manner of my choice."
But I would like to do that. Well, how about you guys?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, sure.
I don't want to sit in the room and everyone's going, "Oh, Shane, how's he today?"
You know what I was thinking about when I heard this news over the weekend? I was thinking how terrifying it must be to know that you have come close to the very bitter end of your life. Like, that's it. It's after that, it's done. You are no more. That must be such a scary feeling to have, no?
Or that it's a relief. You're like, okay, I'm done with this place now. It's time to move on.
Or a relief, depending on...
In the case of the Arch, he believes in an afterlife. So, you know, he thinks the best is ahead of him. And why not? Mm. He might be excited about it. He's looking around, seeing a bunch of losers here on Earth. And he's thinking, I could be with the better people. There's another life that's waiting for me. Either way, do whatever you want, Arch. You've earned the right to decide what to do. You've got more of that right than anyone I can think of right now. So go for it. Do you decide on your own future, and we must shut up and just go with it. Mind our own business.
We really do love to interject into other people's...
How dare we? How dare anybody have a say over how someone else leads or ends their life? Get over yourself. You can't even get your life right, and you're busy telling other people what to do with theirs? I don't know one of these people who's made a great life for themselves or is hugely successful that wants to interfere in everybody else's business. Don't you have enough to worry about? How about your marriage and how about your health? How about your finances? Get that in order. Be exemplary. There isn't one perfect person on earth, but you're ready to start pointing fingers at everyone else. Get over it.
Okay, Gareth, if you are interested, Helen Ziller's book, Not Without a Fight, is going to hit the bookstores this week.
I got an advanced copy.
Oh, fantastic. Yes. Have you started reading it?
Yes.
Oh, have you?
It's very long. It's a big, fat book.
Okay. Have you come across any of what is being called the bombshell revelations that this book reveals?
Well, I heard that she was anorexic. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Time ago, in her teen and early 20s, Helen Ziller was an anorexic.
Is that because of dance partying or food issues?
No. It was. She was anorexic. It's a condition. You know, some people have it. It's a very serious condition, and she managed to beat the anorexia, which is to her credit. But then, Helen Ziller's beaten everything she put her eyes on and decided to, you know, set her sights on. So I'm not surprised by that. But there are lots of other revelations in the book. Tell us more.
Sure. I mean, there are a number of political bombshells, apparently, that she drops in this book. Okay, so let's go through some of these.
Yes.
Some of the most compelling revelations in Helen Ziller's tell-all book are, well, firstly, she speaks about how Lindiwe Mazibuko, you remember Lindiwe Mazibuko,
yes,
right?
Yes.
The party's former parliamentary leader.
Now, here's what's new.
Apparently, Lindiwe Mazibuko isolated Helen Ziller after being elected and used a military operation, which was aided by embedded journalists, to launch her campaign for the DA leadership and try to tarnish Musi Maimane.
She's an ambitious tea girl, that Lindiwe Mazibuko, huh?
Hi, my name is Helen Ziller and I'm the leader of the Democratic Alliance.
Well, not anymore, but yeah.
But still Empress of Cape Town, right?
I mean, please.
We are in government in Cape Town.
Yeah, there you go. Ziller also talks about their family house in Cape Town and how it was used as a hideout place for ANC activists such as Mcebisi Skwatsha, Cameron Dugmore, and Tony Yangeni during the deep, dark apartheid days.
Well, you know, she had a fascinating career. I mean, we interviewed Alistair Sparks here a while ago. He was the editor who sent her out to investigate the Steve Biko story. And remember, she was instrumental in bringing that to the world's attention.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't deny that Helen Ziller doesn't have some struggle credentials. And you can't deny that she's always stood for the things that she stood for at the end of her political career, the whole way through. So, you know what? She's an impressive woman, and I look forward to interviewing her about this book.
She also talks about how former DA leader Tiny Leon,
yes,
he was apparently captured by remaining members of the New National Party in the DA. This is after Martinus van Schalkwyk and top NNP leaders deflected to the ANC in 2001.
What did they do? Capture him and stab him with Cook sisters?
We are going to capture you, Mr. Leon. What happened? What did they do? That sounds incredible. I got to get to that part of the book.
Yeah, you've got to get.
No, guys, let me go. Guys, let me, come on. What's going on here? This is not fair. I'm going to fight back.
Then she also talks about apartheid's last spy chief and later director general of the Western Cape, Neil Barnard. He apparently had a bunker where he and his confidants would get together and discuss their strategies for control of the Western Cape province.
Yes.
Zilla also put together...
Yes, that sounds very exciting.
Zilla also put together a secret group of advisors in the DA called Someday, and they were to strategize on how to save the party from the NNP and Tony Leon back in 2005. So it really sounds like Tony Leon was up to some, you know, nefarious activities within that organization.
I never would have known it. Grab him by the pussy. So trustworthy. Sorry, what did you say there, Ben? All I heard was Donald Trump talking.
He was distracted.
Yeah. Uncle Tony. Never would have thought it.
Who knew, huh?
And then Zilla also talks about the whole debacle regarding Akgang leader, Dr. Mampila Rampil.
Oh, boy. That's a whole chapter.
She basically admits in the book that it was one of the biggest mistakes that she personally feels she has ever made. But she does mention that the DA... would have received a very big, generous donation from, you know, a private funder had her and Mampila Rampele managed to make it work. So that whole thing of the two of them trying to get together seems it was dependent on a whole lot of money being pushed into the DA. Okay.
And the thing about them kissing...
Oh, no, that was just an off-the-cuff thing that,
So there wasn't other times?
I mean, it was very organic, Ben. It wasn't planned or strategized in any way. It was a very organic process that happened to unfold.
Well, the other story that everyone's talking about is the story of Kwezi. That was the woman who accused President Jacob Zuma of rape all those years ago and then had to go into hiding. She had to flee overseas. She was very much victimized and stigmatized by President Zuma's supporters after that trial. And Vusi Pikoli, the former head of the NPA, tweeted this out, which I thought was probably the most interesting summation of her all too short life. He said, "You were born Fezeka, but you died Kwezi. Your body stopped the fight, but your soul is free. Your spirit lives on and will live longer." Meaning, of course, that she casts a huge shadow over the president even to this day.
Yes, I mean, if you'll remember the accounts regarding the details of that story, Fezeka revealed how she was raped by the president. But then in 2006, a judge ruled that no, the encounter between the two of them was in fact consensual. And that is why the president was acquitted of rape charges. Yeah. But, you know, she had been diagnosed with HIV back in 1990 already. And so, you know, even though the family have revealed very little in the form of details surrounding how she passed, the assumption is that, you know, the passing was linked to HIV-related complications.
Right. Well, here's a funny clip of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton at the debate last night. Just take a listen to this.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah, because you'd be in jail.
Secretary.
Which is a pretty good retort. You got to admit, that's a damn fine one, right? All right. You know what he called that? You know what he said after he came up with that great liner? You know what he said?
Grab him by the pussy.
That's what he did, right. Yeah. Okay. Very good.
That's kind of Donald's favorite pastime. Right. And a lot of men's pastime, to be fair.
We are going to try to get AJ Fenter back on the line in the next couple of minutes, and we're going to take your calls, 0861-555-189, once we figured out what's going on over here. And we will take your messages, which have been coming in live this morning. Ben is a boss. Thank you, Gareth Cliff, for the introduction. That's Faisal Clark, who says he's loving Follow the Bounce. That's you, Ben.
Oh, thanks, Faisal.
Jared says, for someone who's lived more than most people on this planet, I think death could be a sobering thought to the arch and everyone else. Temba says, I've just done a search for the Clarity Fund. It's another Ponzi scheme.
Okay, dear.
Okay, there's Temba's point of view. Cindy says, the trick here is to take those pills while you still can. People are not going to budge on the assisted piece. Yeah, you see, this is it's a really, really big debate that we still have to have, this assisted suicide discussion. I don't know if I've got the stomach for it on a Monday morning, but I do think we'll revisit this at some point. And if you feel very strongly about it, by all means, call me and tell me what you think. You know what to do.
Ooh, I can't go any further than this.
Until I die, for you and I.
All right, the Black Eyed Peas. Meet me halfway.
Can you meet me halfway?
How's your Monday going?
Can you meet me halfway?
All right, I'm going to try this. Let's see if we've got AJ. Hey, AJ, can you hear me?
Yes, morning, guys. How's it going?
What a relief. How are you, man?
Not bad. Don't worry about it. I was saying to the guys, you mustn't worry about these things. You could have been part of the 22 that played on Saturday for the Springbok. That could have been much worse.
That would have been much worse. I'll tell you something. What a dismal performance. Like, I don't even want to pretend that I paid any attention, but I did see everybody going crazy afterwards, like they'd been stabbed in the heart or something. Do you think our expectations are just unrealistic? Is that part of the problem in South Africa, AJ?
Well, yeah, I'm unfortunately have to agree with you that, I tell you what, before the game, I mean, I'm a staunch South African, and I will, like I said last time, until we lose, I want to believe that we can always win, like we've done against Australia last week. But, I mean, against All Blacks on Saturday, it was always going to be a tough one. I didn't think it should have been in the 50s, you know, and that is really embarrassing for us, you know, as a rugby proud nation. But I definitely think we are expecting too much from what we have in terms of leadership and coaching at, you know, at the Springboks right now.
Now, AJ Venter is one of the few people who will speak frankly and honestly about the Springboks. Ben, you haven't minced your words this morning about what you think.
Well, Gareth, that's because we've run out of things to say, so we have to do the truth, nothing but the truth. Now, AJ, there's this big Springbok or SA Rugby coaching in Durban taking place now. Do you reckon anything good's going to really come out of it, or is it just going to be the same old saying, well, we must just be better? Like, do you think anything groundbreaking can happen here?
I think it's a good thing. The question is, I mean, guys, let's be honest. We're in a country that does things differently than New Zealand and Australia and other rugby countries and England, for that matter. We've got a heavily involved government that does make decisions. And I'll still say we have to be clever about how we involve and how we change the game for the better for the people that never had the opportunity. The thing is, in my opinion, it starts, we want to fix it top down, but, you know, I've heard a stat the other day where they say 80% of the kids in schools today, now I'm not talking private school kids. I mean, I think we make the mistake to think all our own players are going to come out of the private schools. 80% of the kids out there don't play rugby, they don't want to play rugby, they can't see rugby, that's not on their TV at home, it's not on SABC. They kind of, it's the enemy. The rugby is the wealthy sport. It's the white sport. So from my side, we need to fix it from the bottom up. And when I'm talking about this, I'm not talking only about players. I'm talking about coaches, because we definitely need some leadership in our game. And if we're gonna try and fix it from the top down, for years and years, we're going to sit here on a Monday, and this is what we're going to say.
So it's so really true. It really is. But, you know, is the chance for, say, for Keelan Baloo to go to this coaching in Durban and for these frank conversations to happen? Or is he very much not on the agenda, you think?
I don't think it's going to happen. It's a start. But I'm not sure whether it's actually going to bear fruit at the end of the day. I'd like to see that. I'd like to see them coming out of that with some positive changes, you know, for the better of the game and everyone involved. And I'm not sure whether it's going to happen.
And as far as the All Blacks being stopped, this is almost like a Superman. We've got to try to find the kryptonite situation here, because these guys are just 30 points better than everyone out there.
No, they're absolutely unbelievable. I mean, look, we were poor on Saturday, but yet they were outstanding. They're gonna play against Australia their next game. They're going to play it in New Zealand. So they are going to win or break that record of 18 consecutive test matches in Tier A test matches. And you know what, guys, they deserve it. They do deserve it. They have been outstanding. So I'm actually backing them to break that record on Saturday. And then, you know, they're going overseas. They're not playing England for quite some time. So I don't think they're going to be stopped in the near future. They're playing England, if I'm not mistaken, only in a year and a half or so from now.
All right. So the key really is, like, what you've got to do if you're a South African rugby fan or you're just a rugby fan is just watch New Zealand, enjoy good rugby, and just forget about our own team until they get their act together. Just basically put them on the back burner and pay attention to what New Zealand are doing if you want to watch good rugby.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, these guys, honestly, they've got two teams. They've got 40 guys out there that can play in a test match next Saturday and beat whoever they're playing. What they've got right now is something that we won't see in a long, long time from any team. They're outstanding.
Yeah, just to kind of put that in perspective, after the World Cup, they lost 700 test caps from their starting lineup, and they look stronger than ever. That, I mean, if we lost 300 test caps, I mean, the nation goes into mourning. And they just keep going stronger and stronger. AJ, thanks so much. We hope to have happier Very conversations good. with you in future. Yeah. I'm sure it will happen.
Yeah, thanks, honestly, AJ.
Without Joe, last week when the Aussies won, Joe didn't phone me. You're only phoning when the guys lose. Come on.
All right. What are you doing today? Are you going to go and hang out on the beach again today and just take it easy, have a nice day? I mean, you have such an idyllic life.
I am actually working. I work in the finance world. So I actually listen to your investment talk in the morning because I'm in that game. So thank
please.
You for that.
I know what you're doing. You're going to go and surf today.
I wish.
All right. Thanks very much, man. Have a good day.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, AJ. Cheers, AJ Fenter. There we go. All right. Let's get into some news headlines with Mabale Moloi. It's just after 7:30. Mubs, what do we need to know this morning if we haven't been paying attention this weekend? What is the most important thing to know?
Well, Gareth, the family of Fezekile Khuzwayo, also known as Kwezi, says that she'll be remembered as a vibrant and loving daughter. They've described her death as a shock to the family. The family says that Kwezi died on Saturday from an illness. She is, of course, the woman who was dubbed Kwezi after accusing the president of rape back in 2005. In 2006, the president was acquitted of the charge. When the president addressed the IEC results in August this year, after the local government elections, the case was brought back to the world's attention by four women who were wearing black, who participated in a silent protest. They were holding placards which read, 10 years later and remember Kwezi.
I wonder if... I know there's a human inside the president, right? And he was sort of a father figure
Where
to this
do you
girl.
Have such proof, Gareth?
No, hang on. Where? Let's just think about it. Like, there must have been, for him, just a moment when he found out that she died yesterday. There must have been a moment where he reflected on her and on the life. Don't you think?
No, I don't think for a second.
Wow.
Why not?
I don't think this guy cares for emotions or anything like that. That slips him up. He just has one goal in mind, and it's him. I don't think we get too much evidence to suggest otherwise, quite frankly. I mean, at what stage has the human level come out in this guy? We've been overwhelmed by it.
Well,
he's a showman. He knows how to manipulate people, and he knows how to take things.
Well, okay, look, all of that is true. But don't you think, Ben, that when the president is all alone at home at night with nobody around him and he is left alone with his thoughts, and he starts contemplating all the things that he, you know, has done. You don't think that there are moments where he just becomes overwhelmed by it all? I mean, he has to put on a show in front of the rest of us because that's part of his job.
Or do you think he's just relieved that she's dead and now he can move on without having to have this living person who's constantly hanging in the shadows?
That is a lot more believable to me. Like when you say, Mavis, if we've done something in our lives that we might regret, we're alone with our thoughts. We think about it. When he's alone with his thoughts, I'm sure this guy doesn't care. He's alone with like what's happening this week, what he's going to avoid next.
That's one hell of a thing.
Yeah. I reckon that's where he's alone with his thoughts is. It's like, okay, how am I getting out of the next mess?
Look, I know that our dislike for the man plays a very big role in, you know, what we assume he goes through. But at the end of the day, we actually just don't know.
No, we don't. I'm saying it's somewhere between the two. There's either the president who's actually thrilled that she's gone now. One more problem is off the table. And then there's the man who must, in a moment of self-reflection, have some thoughts about this life that was so, you know, overshadowed by his own and by his own actions. This person who grew up thinking of him as a father figure ended up taking him to court, very publicly embarrassing and humiliating him to some degree. And then her life after that, where she was pretty much in seclusion and in hiding and was sidelined and harassed for having said the things she said about him. His life can't have had, her life rather, can't have had no impact on his, is what I'm hoping. He would have a moment to think about.
We're all hoping, sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's leave it. It's all speculation since we don't know what's going on in his head.
Yeah.
So what else is in the news?
Wits University are going to attempt to resume classes again today. Oh, this is after there was, basically it was a dismal failure exactly a week ago when they tried. Wits University student leaders have criticized the institution's conditions for protesting. They say that they are draconian, and they show the university's non-commitment to working with students. Yesterday, the university said classes would resume today after a two-week-long shutdown, but the institution has said that students who do want to continue with the protest must do so peacefully. They have warned them against carrying rocks and stones on campus, gathering outside designated areas, and that all arrested by police will be suspended.
Yeah, I think just arrest them. Let the real-life consequences take hold now, and then perhaps we can all get back to our lives. There's so much to be done. Can you imagine if this whole year of university curriculum is wasted? Can you imagine if everybody has to go back again next year, that a whole new intake of students can't and won't happen because we're still dealing with the first years of this year? Imagine that.
I saw a Twitter thread of a disagreement that was taking place between one student who's against the protests and another who is for the protests. And the one against the protests was saying, you know, I don't have a lot of money. I'm studying on a bursary. And the thing is, I've entered into a contractual agreement with this company paying for my bursary because I'm supposed to go start working for them as soon as I graduate. And now I don't know if I'm going to be able to graduate. And then what's going to happen now? There's a contract that's in place.
I want to know how many of these protesting students are studying things other than humanities. And I don't mean to give the humanities trouble here. I mean, that's what I ended up doing in political science and history. But I don't believe that a lot of these students are science students, engineering students, math students, the kind of people who really just want to get on with it. Humanities students are more interested in more nebulous things, perhaps, and being part of something revolutionary. I don't imagine for a second that the majority of these students are people studying things outside of the humanities. I would be willing to be proved wrong here, but I can pretty much guarantee that's the case, which tells you the whole story.
No, it doesn't.
Yes,
Gareth.
Read between
the
lines.
No, it actually
doesn't. I'm not going to explain myself. How dare you?
Okay. And then lastly, the Ethiopian government yesterday declared a state of emergency in the country, Gareth. This is following months of anti-government protests. This is how bad the situation has become in Ethiopia. It is the first time since the ruling party came into power 25 years ago that a state of emergency has been put in place. Mm-hmm. The country's prime minister said that steps were taken to restore order following escalating protests around the country. Among those protesting are Ethiopia's largest ethnic group, the Oromos, who make up at least a third of the country's 100 million people. They have been marginalized for decades, with tensions rising as the government promoted development that took over Oromo farmland. And now the protests have turned, you know, to against the government. And earlier this month, in October, 52 people died during clashes. And so yesterday, the country decided, we're in a bad place now, so they have officially declared a state of emergency.
Wow. Ethiopia. I thought that was one of the more stable African countries, but it seems now that even they've got their troubles. Not good. All right, there's the news headlines. Let's get into some sport headlines for those people who may have missed some of the action over the weekend. Ben is here to recap it for us and to tell us what the highlights are.
The Springboks could absolutely thrash, the Proteas absolutely thrashed the Aussies, and Bafana Bafana were pretty much in the middle and very boring with a draw against Burkina Faso. Those are your three major big headlines from a South African perspective. In motor racing, Rosberg, Nico Rosberg, is doing so well in his Mercedes right now. He just won the Tokyo Grand Prix, which means with four races to go, he's 33 points clear. Which doesn't mean good things for Lewis Hamilton, who was too busy yesterday on his phone to even give a toss at the press conference.
Oh, really?
And in golf, yeah, he just wasn't really answering questions. He was Snapchatting and putting faces on his face. Okay. And yeah, he couldn't give a toss. Tyrrell Hatting, he won the Alpha Downhill Links Championship, which is played over the fine links of St. Andrews and surrounds. And he won that by four shots. Massive record-equaling score there. He shot a 62 on Saturday at the old course, which tied the record for the great old course. And tied second was Richard Stoney. So the two big things for the weekend from a South African perspective was the fact that the Proteas keep hammering the Aussies, and one of our golfers was second best.
Okay.
Those are your headlines for the weekend.
There we go. Short and sharp with Ben Karpinski this morning. Coming up, if you want to be a software developer, we'll tell you how with Riaz Mulla. He'll be joining us from Hyperion Development. They just won an award from Facebook, among other things. We'll also talk to Toby Shapshak about some data questions. Right There we go. That's Post Malone with Justin Bieber and Deja Vu. And lyrics supplied by?
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Drop your panties.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Donald Trump... awesome. All right. Listen.
You decided against commenting further.
Yeah, you know what? You're done. This whole Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton thing, I could tell you something for sure. I know this for sure. America are going to suddenly wake up at the end of November after this election has happened and they've had a week or two to calm down and they decided who their next president is. All of a sudden, America's going to wake up and go, oh my God, we've only got like a month or two of Obama left and then we're in deep, deep trouble. This is the best president we've ever had and there's nothing we can do to keep him. We have decided on a terrible path. Right? And we had the choice between shit for brains and douchebag. And we chose one of those two. It's just horrible. Let us be clear. Politics, it's a scummy business anyway, right? But maybe this is a failure of, and nobody wants to admit this, but maybe democracy is not the best system if this is what it can do.
Oh, dear.
Maybe we need to start exploring other systems. Winston Churchill once said that democracy is the worst form of government besides all the others.
Is there a best form of government, though? Because in my mind, as long as you're going to have just a small group of people who are supposedly in charge and are the government and running things... There's never going to be a best system. It's being run by humans, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Oh, and then in other news, I see that my my school class are doing some kind of reunion.
Oh, you have to go.
I'd missed the last one. Remember, I just refused to go. It was about, 5 or 10 years ago. I can't even remember.
When is the next one?
This month.
You have to go.
I don't know if I can.
Come on, just go.
What for? What am I going to do there? Who am I going to see? All the people that I still want to be in contact with, I'm in contact with. I don't want to see some of those people.
Oh, but I mean, it will be
horrible.
It will be an interesting, different experience.
I don't know. My life's very different to the rest of the people I was at school with.
Oh,
I
mean, come on.
It really is. I don't do a lot of the things that... some of these people are doctors. Some of these people are lawyers. Some of them, God alone knows what they're doing. They might be prostitutes or something. I have no idea. But I'm not excited about it at all. What will I do there, Mubs? I mean, would you go to yours?
You know, I haven't up until now.
Yeah, you've got a cheek telling me to, but you won't.
I know.
I love the way what's good for the Mabali is never good for the Gareth and vice versa.
I have a genuinely good excuse. I mean, my old school is hours away from anywhere where I lived. 4 hours away from Qwaqwa.
What was that again? Uranya Macy's word?
Uranya. 6 hours away from Joburg. So that's my excuse. Oh, Every time they have a reunion, I'm like, driving, problem.
Oh, please, you could have gone with the Four Pipes convoy. You would have been there already.
I don't have four pipes.
You could have hiked a lift with somebody. I don't know.
I'm sure I could have.
You could have hitched a ride in one of the four pipes.
No, I think you should go purely because you don't want to. You know, sometimes the best experiences come out of things that you didn't, you weren't initially interested
and
in.
I know I'm going to get there and I'm not going to want to be there. I just know it's going to happen.
Yeah, but Gareth, it's not about you. It really isn't. My buddy and I need things like this.
You need things like this.
Yes.
What for? What do you want me to do? Record the whole thing?
If you want to make it even worse, go for it.
Yeah, go for it.
I'll walk in with a camera crew. Can you imagine how that'll freak everybody out? I'll go in like a Kardashian on a reality TV show, huh?
Just go and catch up with some people. Their lives might have turned out to be thoroughly interesting and you could pick up one or two interesting things to share with us.
I'll bet you there won't be. Yeah?
Can I tell you what Drake once said about his high school reunion?
How did we
he went to school with white people. What does he know?
Okay, so this is straight out quote from his song Pound Cake.
Yeah.
My classmates, they went on to be chartered accountants or work with their parents. But thinking back on how they treated me, my high school reunion might be worth an appearance. Make everybody have to go through security clearance. Tables turn, bridges burn, you live and learn.
He's got some insecurities, that man.
I think it's pretty cool. Imagine, like, everyone, like, you might have been a nerd in school, but now you're like...
Are you going to go to yours?
Depends where I am in my life.
So you'll only go if you're doing really well.
Yeah, so I can rub it in people's faces. Otherwise, no. I'll have to decline.
You see, I don't know that I want to. I think I've done okay in life. I'm pretty happy with where I've been in the last couple of years since I left school. And I was very ordinary at school. I was friends with the jocks and the nerds.
But now you must go back to realize that the jocks are probably all like lowlifes and the nerds have become something. There's something for you to go see.
All right. Maybe I'll compare them and maybe I'll rank them. I'll actually do that. I'll draw up I'll take a whiteboard to the reunion. I'll put it on one of those tripods and I'll actually write their names in order of success.
Okay.
And say that the most successful person here is this girl and the most unsuccessful person is this guy. Let me rank them. Why don't I rank the people at my... I got nothing to lose. They hate me anyway, right?
Do they?
I don't know. I'm just assuming they would.
Yes, Gareth. I always assume
people
would
hate me.
Encourage them in this, Mubs. This is a good idea.
Oh.
Why don't I rank the people at my school reunion?
You always assume people hate
you. In order of net worth.
Oh, God.
I'm gonna look them up and see what they're doing and guess their value in the economy and then rank them according to that.
Okay.
The poorest person here is... that guy.
Yeah, that's really going to make for a good night.
Oh, come on. That'll make it fun for me. I don't care about anyone else's feelings on that night. Wait, want me to go, now I'm going to make it fun.
Ben, did he say that Drake was the one with insecurities, or was he talking about himself?
I don't know. Every now and again, I think it's the same person.
Oh, what are you talking about? All right, listen, we've got Toby Shapshack on the line. Good morning, Mr. Shapshack. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Would you suggest I should go to my high school reunion? I was just debating this with my buddy and Ben. And I'm only going
to... I was just listening to you thinking, you know, there's a whole thing here, right? Like, no one wants to go back to their reunion until they've made it really successfully so they can, you know, do the Zoomer with the middle finger, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think about the guys I went to school with. They're a bunch of wankers. They, you know, I was a thin, nerdy kid. No one particularly liked me. They gave me a hard time. You know, I made a name for myself as a journalist, and suddenly all of them wanted to be my friend again.
Yeah.
The same people who were total, you know, teenage bullies when I was at school. I mean, that's my experience at school, right? School is just a bunch of bullies. The teachers are the biggest of the lot. They bully kids. I mean, I went to an all-boys school. They bully the kids. The matric bullies everyone else down below. I mean, it's a disaster in terms of socialization. If you think about most of our experiences coming out of school, by the time you get out of school, you're like, you don't want to have anything to do with the people you left. It's such a, you know, it's such a structure orientated about the, you know, the sporty kids and the popular kids. I mean, what is the next generation of how to be, you know.
But then like that's why I'm saying I should go, but we should actually rank the people there in very public ways. I should actually publish a list beforehand of who's the most successful person we were at school with and who's the least. And actually put it out there, because then, you know, a lot of it is going to be about social hierarchy. So I might as well draw up the blueprint and let everybody else follow.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I mean, I'm
not looking to make friends.
I deliberately didn't go to King David because I didn't feel like I needed any of that additional anxiety. But I went to Highlands, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, at Highlands, I could tell you stories about the kind of socialization one learns at Highlands, which was really quite terrible. As Paul Diamond always says, when you went to Highlands, either you became a lawyer or you needed a lawyer. So are we talking about the disaster that is ICT policy in South Africa?
All right, let's...
Or the disaster that is the Springboks? I was listening to AJ Fink, and I mean, he always said it like it was when he was a player. He was very controversial. He got, you know, he got into trouble with a lot of coaches. But, you know, that's really the problem, isn't it? I mean, we've had this complete breakdown of what we were once good at, and the rest of the rugby world has just completely moved past us. We are the kind of, you know, all we know is how to pick and go and run into faces, not spaces. You know, it's, I mean, Ben's probably more frustrated about this than I am. I'm just a lowly fan.
Toby, I'm actually not. I've got to the point now where everything's been said and everything has happened. So is there anything more you can really add? It's like, you know, like even the dumb drunks in the stadium start making sense. That's when Springbok rugby really has hit rock bottom.
Yeah, that's terrifying, isn't it?
All right, but let's talk about this ICT white paper, which everybody's very worried about. What exactly is this? It falls into the Department of Telecommunications ambit, but explain to us from an idiot's point of view, because I don't entirely understand it myself. What they're proposing.
About explaining things like an idiot when I speak to you, Gareth.
Thank you.
There's a whole bunch of context to this, which I'll get to in a moment. But the bottom line about the ICT paper is this. You know, spectrum, radio frequency that we use to talk on the cell phone together, we're probably using, in the very early days, you used 900 megahertz. Then they started using 1800 megahertz. The very sexy technology is at 2.6 gigahertz, and then 700 and 800 megahertz. Now, the 700 and 800 band at the moment is being used for television. People watching SABC with an antenna, they're using that 700 and 800. And it's at the time people started using it in the 50s and 60s, there was nothing else you could do with it, so no problem. What's being done with it at the moment is highly inefficient because it's still very analog.
This is why they want to take television off of that band completely and put it into the digital realm.
Exactly, and they call it the digital dividend for a good reason. So the reason I have to explain all of this is because in the beginning, when we just had 2G, we used 900 and 1800 megahertz as the ranges for providing voice calls.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is you sell a block of that frequency to an MTN or a Vodacom or a Cell C, and they use that frequency to give up the signal that we get, right?
Right.
So what's happened is because we're so slow in freeing up that 800 and 700, the TV channel, that's going to go to digital terrestrial television, DTT. And just by the way, the international deadline for that was last June. That's how far behind we are. And because we haven't licensed any of the new spectrum that's available, the 2.6, that spectrum, the service providers are having to do their damnedest to kind of provide digital services on frequencies that are better suited to call.
Right.
That's the first thing. But actually, that's the second thing. The first thing is that when the regulator gives or sells the spectrum to a network operator like MTN or Vodacom, effectively it's like giving them a leasehold. Like they don't own the property, but they can build for 100 years, and when the 100 years comes up, they'll renew the license, that kind of thing. A bit like property ownership in Hong Kong.
Right.
Just so it makes me sound like I'm internationally knowledgeable and shit. but what's happened is that this paper has come back and said, actually, the government, if it wants to, can take that back. So you've built a skyscraper, a hotel with a swimming pool on the top deck. You've built an enormous amount of infrastructure. You know, Vodacom and spend between 8 and 10 billion rand a year rebuilding the network. One of the network guys at Vodacom is explaining this to me. And they rebuild something like 70% of their network every year just to keep up with demand, just to keep up with the fact that so many people are joining the network.
This is not to get us to 5G or anything. This is just to keep things as they are.
No, just to keep us happy on 3G and 4G.
Right.
So what they have to do is they have to put in more capacity all the time. And because they don't have access to these network, the frequency that is best suited for it. So basically what we're doing is you've got a 6-lane highway, you know, lane 4, 5, and 6, are actually the best suited for driving fast. Mm-hmm. But it turns out lane 1 is also really good. Lane 1 and 2, 700 and 800.
Mm-hmm.
Lane 1 and 2 are very good because, you know, you're closer to the inside of the track and you can go faster, however we want to play the analogy. But the bottom line is lane 1 and 2 of the 6-lane highway are being used by television right now.
Mm-hmm.
And lane 5 and 6 that we are desperate for, we can't get because, you know, it's locked up in this process in between the ICASA licensing it and the communication minister.
Right, so I need to understand.
Who
do we blame for this? Is it Siyabonga Qwele? Is it Faith Mutambi?
Well, no,
is it none of them?
You're going to love this. Because because this is literally Jacob Zuma's fault. The Department of Communications was this incredibly dysfunctional department. You know, we jokingly call it miscommunications in the tech journalism space, and it is. We've had people who seemingly just don't understand the incredible importance of telecommunications in this world. It's the new gold. It's the ability for the knowledge economy to take off. It's the way we all communicate. People build businesses on it. Mm-hmm. Look at what previously an internet business was built on the internet, like Google or Facebook. Mm-hmm. All the new great businesses are being built on mobile. Mm-hmm. WhatsApp was never a desktop, application.
Sure.
It started on our phones, and it has 1 billion users. WeChat has 700 million users, a lot of them in China, but a lot of them in South Africa. Mm-hmm. You have all of these new generation of media, of technology companies that are all based on the cell phone, and what they need is data access. So Jacob Zuma, in trying to deploy as many cadres as he possibly could, split one dysfunctional ministry into two so that they are both supremely dysfunctional. And what you've got now is the two ministers fighting with each other, feuding with each other over who is more important and who deserves to be in the spot and who gets to control which and what and where. You know, this part of this whole thing with Gwele fighting off Faisal Thambi is that, you know, he's taking control of some of the regulators, like the CASA, out of her portfolio.
Right.
They should never have been split into two. And in fact, you just look at the dysfunction of it. You know, the ANC has a policy around set-top boxes, which are, you know, set-top boxes basically on top of the TV set. That's what a satellite decoder like DSTV is, a set-top box.
Right.
You know, an Apple TV is a set-top box. And what that is you know, the old televisions used to have the ability to receive a signal through an aerial. Now, because it's going to be digital, you need another set-top box, and you put that on so that you can connect the signal.
What would you get in that set-top box? And you just get SABC?
Here's the thing, right? So all of this stuff has been decided upon, it's been agreed upon, it's ANC policy, and then out of the blue, Facebook somebody does exactly the opposite. And this has been going on for the 3 years that they've been in office. And she goes against the ANC policy, then they sue, then someone else sues. The bottom line is that the ANC decided, or the conventional wisdom is that you encrypt the signal to the set-top boxes. Why? So that people can't steal it. You're a Hollywood manufacturer, content maker, mm-hmm. and you make a good movie, and you don't want people to steal your movie. Therefore, you license it to TV networks or stations, and they encrypt the signal like the STV does so that it doesn't get stolen. Everybody can't pick it up. Firstly, for the network, they want to make sure that the only people who can read it are people who are paying their bills.
Right.
And then for the rights holders, they don't
want to. Would we as the public have to pay for this?
No, I mean, from the SABC or from ETV, no. I mean, ETV wants the signal encrypted, because then it gives them a strategic advantage. MultiChoice doesn't want it, because MultiChoice has built their whole network using encrypted set-top boxes, which we call DSTV Explorers, and they think it gives a strategic advantage to one of their competitors, which the state is going to pay for. The state's going to pay for 5 million of boxes.
Jeez.
I mean, there's only something like somewhere between 7 and 10 million TV sets, people say. It depends. Or households that can't afford that have TV sets that can't afford to buy a set-top box.
Toby,
therefore the government is going to sponsor.
Explain to me.
This is just the whole side story, the current saga.
All right, just one last thing, because this is for a lot of people, it's confusing, as important as it is, because, you know, it affects us all, and whether or not we can get the kind of television that we're hoping for, and whether or not we'll get the kind of bandwidth that we need, the spectrum that we need to improve our mobile connections. All of that aside, what does Jimmy Money have to do with any of this?
Well, this is very interesting, isn't it? I mean, he, you know, this is
I've written my column about it, and I'm really seriously wondering whether to publish it or not, because the last time there was an outrage, Jimmy Munyes reported a whole bunch of people for racism, including, you know, people like Duncan McLeod from Tech Central.
Right.
And this is the kind of rearguard action that you have happening. Justice Malala wrote a very good column about it last week. You have, you know, in the apartheid days, two men with a typewriter now, you know, two men with a laptop, and in Jimmy Munyes' case, one man with two foundations and a Twitter account. And he came out and he defended the whole thing with Clarie Mutsuneng, which falls under Faith Mufundi. Mm-hmm. You know, and her handling of it has been utterly and profoundly deplorable,
yeah,
and
unbelievable,
dishonest and illegal. I mean, we can just go on and on. And he came out and he defended, you know, he said something. And the Faith Mufundi's spokesman put out a statement almost immediately distancing himself or distancing the minister from Mr. Munyes. And then, you know, within a couple of hours, put out another statement distancing themselves from the distancing statement. I mean, this is the absurdity of the situation we're in. This woman has had one major responsibility in the last 3 years, which was to oversee this
migration,
the digital dividend, the migration, and has completely failed in every way possible. And yet, you know, goes on. Calls a press conference from time to time and accuses
where do we get negative. Where do we get to read your column?
It'll be in the Financial Mail on Thursday.
All right, very good. Well, thank you, Toby. Thanks for trying to clear that up for us.
I'm as clear as mud, right?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure it out, but there we go, in the Financial Mail.
It's easier to be a Springbok supporter than it is to understand telecoms in South Africa right now.
That's saying something. Thank you. Toby Shapshak, the editor and publisher of Stuff Magazine. Very nice. Hey, Mubs?
Yeah.
Digital migration, still confusing as all hell. It is 9 minutes after eight. When we come back in a moment or two, we'll speak to Riaz Mulla. He has got a business called Hyperion Development. If you ever wanted to be a software developer, they say that this is the one job, the one field of expertise where you will always be useful.
Always, always?
Well, yeah. Because if machines are going to take over, which they steadily are, then surely you should be able to program those machines in order to make yourself indispensable. We'll find out from Riaz in a moment. They won an award just recently from Facebook. So he's got lots to talk about there as well. He was on that trip to Silicon Valley with me in May of this year. Very interesting guy. Smart as a button.
Cliffcentral.com.